It is Thursday, July 26th, 2018. This is the PW Torch Livecast on a Thursday night, so that means Andrew Socek and I are talking Impact Wrestling. I'm Mike McMahon from the PW Torch. Andrew Socek is alongside from PW Torch and PW Podcasts. And Andrew, we haven't talked since Slammiversary, so I'm sure there'll be a lot of Slammiversary talk in here, too. Have you had a chance to watch that show yet? I know you weren't able to watch it live on Sunday, but have you had a chance to watch it at any point this week?
Sadly, I have not. I've read your report. I read Jason Powell's and kind of John Moore's thoughts on it. But this weekend is looking when I will get to that. So apologies on that.
Well, you won't be disappointed. I can tell you that. Yeah. I thought it was one of their better shows. It was easily the best pay-per-view they've put on in years. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the better shows they put on in years, too. I thought about this after the show on Sunday. It could have been. So I've been covering Impact for the Torch for a little over 3 years. And if you include every show, so that's been like 156 Impacts, roughly, and however many pay-per-views. This, I think, was easily the best Impact show that I've covered for the site in 3 years. It was that good from start to finish.
Wow, that's crazy. Awesome to hear, and now I'm even more excited to check out the show.
What did you think of their follow-up? I mean, obviously, you know the news that came out of the show. They followed up with this show tonight, where they main evented with a rematch. It was Matt Sydal and Brian Cage. Cage gets the win. I thought the show overall tonight was good. I kind of fantasy booked that main event a little differently. But what did you think of their follow-up with this show tonight?
I thought this was strong. So not having seen Slammiversary, I hadn't seen the set. I hadn't seen the crowd. That was a huge improvement, I thought. It immediately made the show more fun. It was cool just to see Don Callis and Josh Matthews actually at ringside. It just felt different. I thought this was good. I thought this was a good effort. A couple questionable things, as always, but overall it was strong. And it looks like, I've kind of read what you've been saying, that they're finally getting sort of a direction, going in a new, more, I guess, adult-oriented route. And it certainly seems by tonight's showing that is where they are headed.
Yeah, I thought the set was cool. I actually like the setting. I mean, it's in a smaller nightclub-type setting, but I think it works. Mm-hmm. I think it's a concert venue, too. So, like, that lighting above the stage, it's different. Like, the roof, every once in a while you see the shots of the roof, like when they're shooting from the floor up into the ring, and you see the Impact logo on those ribbon boards kind of circulating around. The whole building just looks kind of cool. And you're right. I think the crowd helps a lot. I mean, when you have people actually, actual wrestling fans who are cheering for the wrestling matches and making up chants that make sense because they're wrestling fans and they seem to know the product, just drastically improves the overall presentation of the show. The show's more fun to watch as an audience member when you're watching, or just as a television viewer, when you're watching a show that has a crowd like that that's into it. I feel like I'm more into the show when the crowd at the show is into the show as opposed to some of those Orlando shows.
Oh, definitely. We've talked about it, I guess, over the past year or so. Ever since we started this show, the Impact Zone can be brutal. It can be embarrassing. You feel bad for the wrestlers. Most of the people there don't care. They don't go along with the chants. And we saw so many good matches, and nobody cared about them. We saw like Bobby Lashley and Brian Cage, which felt like a major match, and it was near silence. So seeing this tonight, seeing them excited, seeing wrestlers over and hearing chants, even Impact Wrestling chant, which was kind of novel to hear.
Yeah,
it was fun. And I hope they keep up this momentum. I don't know if they can keep going back to this place again and again and again and kind of maintain that same momentum, same excitement. But this, I think, was the best crowd they've had probably since, I didn't see the pay-per-view, but probably since, maybe Bound for Glory or Redemption.
Yeah. I actually thought the crowd was better on Sunday. And that's not a knock on the crowd tonight. The crowd tonight was good. I thought the crowd was better on Sunday. And part of that might just be the live atmosphere, too.
Sure.
But the one thing you brought up that I think people are going to miss on or just miss out on or not realize that I thought was really good here, too, was the fact that Don Callis and Josh Matthews were at ringside. I mean, you brought it up, they're there. So it looked like the commentary was being done live to tape, so to speak. Like, they were doing it as it was happening in the ring instead of dubbing it later. And I noticed it. I think Greg Parks brought it up on the post live, or the post Slammiversary live cast on Sunday. But that drastically improves Josh, I think. Just being in that atmosphere where you have a crowd around you as you're calling the action and they're getting excited. Mm-hmm. I didn't have nearly as many complaints about the announcing tonight as we usually do, at least for me. I mean, I thought it was good on Sunday, and I thought it was good here tonight too. And I wonder how much of it helps when they're just at ringside with the crowd around them instead of being in a studio. I think that helps a lot. I think it also helps that from, again, a television standpoint, the audio sounds better. Like, it doesn't sound like it's dubbed commentary where the crowds turn way down and the ring noises are turned way down. You could hear everything. You could hear everything like you would on Raw. You know, sometimes you hear the banging of the ring in the announcer's mic in the background because it's done live. I thought the show sounded better, and I thought the quality of the announcing was better, probably because they're in the environment. It's easy to get a little jacked up and get excited when you're in the environment. I mean, that's one of the things I know you've talked about a lot is, hey, they don't get excited enough. Mm-hmm. Where there's no energy or emotion in their announcing. I can imagine, though, that could be hard when you're sitting in a studio trying to have some type of emotion of something you're watching on the screen, as opposed to being there and, like we talked about, the crowd's going wild around you. It's a lot easier, I would think, to invest emotionally when you have that atmosphere going on around you.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's a good point. Usually when I write notes for this show or for the hits and misses column, for the Torch, I jot down a couple, almost every week without fail, I jot down a couple things that Josh Matthews said or moments that he really, I thought, was pretty lousy in. But tonight I didn't catch anything. I may have just been distracted by the crowd itself or the new atmosphere. But yeah, I thought both of those guys, Callis and Matthews, tonight were better than they've been in a while.
Looking at the main event, and the main event was Brian Cage retaining the X Division title over Matt Sydal. The one thing that I would have done differently here, and it's one of my only real critiques on the show, I would have somehow, as much as I don't like, you know, screw job finishes, I think I would have found a way to get out of the Slammiversary match differently and make tonight Brian Cage's title win. I just think it would have played better. I thought. First of all, I mean, I think you'll know when you watch the pay per view this weekend. I thought tonight was a better match. I thought this match tonight was a better match than they had on Sunday. Also, you know what? Like, of all the storylines coming out of the show on Sunday, I don't feel like anybody was talking about Brian Cage's title win. They were talking about Pentagon and Sami Callihan having a great match. They were talking about, you know, even LAX and the OGs had a really good match. I think Moose and Austin Aries surprised people. I think people were surprised by Austin Aries winning, so that kind of dominated some of the headlines. Not a lot of people were talking about Brian Cage winning the X Division Championship. So if you could have found a way to get out of that match, and I think there were ways to do it too, because who was it? Matt Sydal. Matt Sydal has in recent weeks kind of aligned himself with Jimmy Jacobs and Kongo Kong. So you could have easily had, you know, Kong interfere to give Cage a DQ win. So now you don't even need to give Cage a loss. You can give Cage a DQ win. He gets screwed out of winning the title. And then they book a rematch for tonight. Maybe you even put it in a cage to keep Kongo Kong and Jimmy Jacobs out, or whatever the case is. And then Cage wins the belt tonight on a show that would be the main attraction. And the story coming out of this Impact would be Brian Cage wins the X Division Championship, as opposed to his title win coming on Sunday, kind of getting lost in the shuffle with everything else that they had going on. And the match tonight was good, and him retaining tonight was good, but I felt like it just would have felt bigger if he won the title tonight, and they found a way to get out of that match on Sunday so that his title win didn't seem like it was lost among, you know, so much other stuff going on.
Yeah, I could see that. For one thing, you're going to have a lot more viewers seeing that win, and that, you know, Brian Cage is the guy they want to. It certainly looks like they want him to be their, you know, top babyface in the future. So I think that would have been kind of cool. Yeah, to save that for tonight. I mean, I go back to when Goldberg beat Raven, you know, for the U.S. heavyweight title. That was a pretty memorable Nitro moment. And they're similar. They're kind of doing that push although they gave up on the undefeated streak for ridiculous reasons. So they could have gotten – Yeah, for sure. And since that's gone, you could have, you know, gone that route again of doing a schmoz finish at the pay-per-view. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think that would have been bigger. I like the match tonight, but it did feel at the end of the night just kind of like, oh, okay, well, that was fine. You know, they did throughout the night give some hooks to tune in next week, but it didn't end really strong. And I think this new setting, having a couple hundred thousand people watch, I'm down with that, seeing a big moment like that.
And you also, I mean, who knows? We'll see if it plays out this way. But I would think that they are going to have more people watching this show tonight just because of the fact that they did so well on Sunday. And the pay-per-view was so universally praised. We'll see when the number comes in tomorrow, but I'm guessing that this show tonight is probably going to do pretty well viewership wise, just because there's not much on against them. You know, it's still the middle of the summer. The NFL hasn't started yet, so there's not really much competition, and they're coming off of a pretty highly praised pay-per-view. I would think that their viewership would probably be up tonight. Now, you wouldn't have known that going in, right? You wouldn't have known that going into Sunday, but still, you're right. No matter what, I don't care if there's 250,000 people watching the show. They didn't have 250,000 pay-per-view buys. So there's going to be more people watching the show tonight than there would have been on Sunday. So like you said, you give Cage that big moment in front of a bigger audience. I think, you know, there are multiple reasons why it would have maybe made sense to do it that way. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't think it's going to hurt Brian Cage moving forward. I just think it would have been better to give him the moment by himself tonight rather than doing it on a night where so much. And again, like, I don't know that they could have predicted that, right? I mean, did they know that Callahan and Pentagon would steal the show? Did they know that LAX and Homicide and Hernandez would have such a great match? I don't think that they, I mean, maybe they did, right? But I don't think that they expected Cage's win to kind of get underplayed the way that it probably did because of so much else happening on that card.
Yeah, and another thing on top of that is that it would have protected Matt Sydal a little bit, you know, having him lose cleanly twice in a row.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's not fatal for his character, but I feel like after months and months of trying to make this character of his work, I feel he's finally starting to get comfortable at it. He's like, the character's getting over a little. And to have him lose, you know, twice pretty decisively, again, not fatal. He'll overcome it, but probably not completely necessary.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, let's go to our first break. When we come back, we'll get to phone calls. The number's 515-605-9345. Again, it's 515-605-9345. You just got to hit the number one if you want to get into the caller queue. So if you just call the phone line, it's going to show up on the side here, but it's not going to tell us that you want to get on the air. So if you are on hold and you want to get on the air, you just got to hit the number one while you're on hold. You'll hear the voice prompt that tell you that you're now in the host queue, and that's going to tell us that you want to get on the air. So again, 515-605-9345. Hit the number one when you're on hold, and that'll tell us that you want to get on the air. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will get to some phone calls here on the Thursday Livecast.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But before we get to phone calls, we got to tell you a little something about Harry's Razors. I love shaving with Harry's. I actually shaved for the first time in like a month the other day, and I did it with a Harry's razor, and I wouldn't do it with any other razor because Harry's razors are the best. Harry's stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors is not an easy decision. So they created a trial offer, and you can claim yours by going to harrys.com. /PWTorch. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew that a great shave came down to something really simple. Great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. That's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. By selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at a price much lower than the leading brand, just $2 per blade, and that's compared to $4 or more by some of the big box blades you'll find in the local department or drugstores. There's a quality guarantee as well. If you don't love your shave, let Harry's know within 30 days, and they'll give you a full refund. Here's some details on the trial offer that you can claim at harrys.com/PWTorch. You're going to get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. You're going to get a weighted ergonomic handle, a five-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of our show here at the Thursday Livecast can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/PWTorch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/PWTorch to redeem your offer. Let them know that Andrew and I sent you, and they're going to help support the show here on the Thursday Livecast. Again, that link is harrys.com/PWTorch. So we're going to get to some calls if the switchboard for calls works, because the ads don't. So we'll see. Like I said, Andrew, what happened last time we had issues like this, all of a sudden they just popped up in the middle of the show. I remember we were just talking and all of a sudden an ad played. So if an ad starts playing, we'll let it play and come back right after it. So we'll see, I guess. I see it loading here. I get the little pinwheel going on for a PW Podcasts ad. So we'll see if it decides to play here at some point.
This is a lot of tension here.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of – I've been delaying hoping that it just would start playing by now, but it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So, all right. Well, let's see if the phone calls work. And, again, you can join us on the show at 515-605-9345. Let's first try Ryan in Maryland. Ryan, can you hear us? Or better yet, can we hear you? Oh, no. This is bad news.
Yep.
Yeah. So nothing seems to be playing.
Sorry, Ryan.
Let me try to put you back on hold here. I apologize. All right. Well, while we try to get this figured out, let's talk about some more Slammiversary stuff while we try to get the technical issues here sorted out. Were you surprised? I was surprised, and Greg was surprised on Sunday as well. Were you surprised that they kept the title on Aries and didn't put it on Moose? Because it kind of felt like Sunday and Slammiversary was all building up to Moose winning the world title.
Yeah, definitely I was. I know you and I both predicted last week that Moose would be winning the title. And that's what they'd been building it up for so long. I thought they were doing a pretty good job of it, showing us all these videos of him from high school, from the NFL, and saying, you know, how he gave that all up for professional wrestling. So they made it a really inspirational story, and then he came up short. And yeah. I'm not against that at all. I think now and then you have to do that just to keep things interesting, because if the good guy always wins when you build it up that way, it's just a foregone conclusion. It's less exciting. I think it's the right call. I think Austin Aries is doing a great job. I think tonight he was doing some great promo work. But yeah, I was surprised, although I also mentioned last week they made it so heavy-handed that he's like, yeah, he already ordered the champagne. He's flying his mom in. It almost seemed like heelish. Like, in Moose's mind, it was already going to happen. So to see him come up short is weirdly satisifying.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I think it did pull up Ryan here. Ryan, can we hear you now? Let's try that again.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, perfect. Oh, we can hear you as well. Great. Sorry about that. Little technical snafu. What's on your mind tonight?
First question for you is, do you know why Vince McMahon never signed Brian Cage to a contract or made an effort? Because it seems like the type of wrestler he might be interested in.
Yeah, that's a great question, because Brian Cage seems like he was built in a laboratory for Vince McMahon. I mean, he seems like he's designed the exact way Vince McMahon wants to see his top guys designed. I don't know why he didn't go after him more now. Andrew, I don't know if you have any guesses there, but I would imagine when Cage's deal is up, Vince is going to be all over him, right?
I would certainly think so, yeah. I mean, I had read about him, and then I saw him in Lucha Underground, and the very first time I saw him, I'm like, wow, how did Vince let that guy go? Before even watching him wrestle, just like his look, you would think he'd be all over him because he's, you know, maybe a little smaller than Ryback. I've never seen him side by side, but he's just like far better in the ring, can do he's just far more agile. He's an impressive guy. So, yeah, I mean, you would think by now he would have had a run in the company. I don't know if his deal with Lucha Underground, you know, there was kind of some non-compete going on. But, you know, Prince Puma's ended and he showed up in NXT. I know he was in developmental for a while. I recently read an interview with him kind of talking about that, how he wanted to be like a Wolverine character. And, you know, talking about interactions with Dusty Rhodes. And then he was just suddenly released when they were talking about bringing him up to the main roster. But yeah, I mean, he didn't say anything. Maybe he had like an attitude problem, they thought. But yeah, I would certainly think he's got to be on their radar whenever he is free.
Andrew and Ryan, I'm interested in your take on this too. Does he look bigger to you? I mean, I know with the taping schedule, we don't see him week to week, right? So when we last saw him on TV hitting into Slammiversary, it was probably a month and a half ago, whatever it was. Both at Slammiversary and tonight, he seems like he's bigger. Like, I think he's did he grow? Not physically taller, obviously. I'm just talking muscular wise. Do you guys think he's bigger? Because he looked bigger to me.
I'm not sure. I guess I didn't pick up on that. I mean, just because Matt Sydal is so much smaller than him anyway.
That could be too. Yeah, it could be an optical illusion.
Yeah, so I think because he was wrestling like Congo Kong before that. I'll keep an eye on it though and see who he faces in the coming weeks. And yeah, I'll take a look though.
I didn't say anything as well. In size.
Cool. All right. What else is on your mind?
Yeah, my second question is, they claim that this may have been the greatest pay-per-view in Impact Wrestling history. Can you name a pay-per-view that could maybe give a run for its money as being the greatest besides Slammiversary 2018?
Ooh, that is a good question. You know, I'm trying to think. I mean, because there was obviously a lot. I mean, back when they were monthly, especially, there was a lot of pay-per-views. Mm-hmm. Which one? You know what? I thought that the lockdown where Kurt Angle wrestled Samoa Joe in the main event.
Oh, yeah.
Was that 08 maybe or 09?
I want to say 08.
That I remember being a really good pay-per-view. But other than... Yeah, I mean, I'm having trouble thinking of one offhand, but I remember that lockdown, just not only that match, but that that whole show being really good. I remember liking it a lot. And even today, like I always go back to that in my own mind as being one of my favorite TNA shows ever. Andrew, what do you think? Any others that come to the top of your head?
Oh, man. Even though I've seen dozens of their shows, to me, it's not they don't brand them well enough like WWE does, where you can pick out like kind of in your mind play out multiple matches on that card like a WrestleMania Royal Rumble. So a lot of these matches blur together and I can't and it's hard to say which one was which. So I was gonna go the one that popped in my mind was Against All Odds 2006. That's Christian beating Jeff Jarrett, and for me that was just because it was like a cool moment. It was like a pretty good Samoa Joe Styles Daniels match. It wasn't their classic one, but I remember there being a couple good matches on that show, but I, you know, going back also and reading reviews from the Torch, it sounds like most of their shows landed in the 4 to 6 range. You know, basically a couple good matches, but the card itself was a little disappointing, whereas all the reviews I've read on this one have been very highly praised. So this time, every time after WrestleMania ends, they say that was the greatest WrestleMania of all time. Sort of thing. It sounds like this actually could be their greatest pay-per-view they've put forth so far.
Yeah, the only other one that I think is, and it depends on what you like what type of style you like. The other one that comes to mind is, I want to say it was in 2005, and I don't remember the name of the show. It may have been Victory Road or Turning Point or one of those. But there was a show I remember that had Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett had the title. He defended against Rhino in the main event, and that match was surprisingly good, I remember. But the two big matches that I remember on the show were Samoa Joe and AJ Styles for the X Division title, and then it was the show that had the first barbed wire massacre match with Abyss and Sabu. Whichever show that was, and it was either, I want to say it was either like Turning Point or Against All Odds or Victory Road, and I think it was 2005. I remember that show as being a really good show top to bottom too. But this one though, this one, Ryan, is up there, because like Andrew said, I mean, I loved it, and it's been pretty much universally praised by anybody who saw the show on Sunday. So this one's up there, because I think it had a little bit of everything. It had some athletic matches, and obviously had some pretty violent and bloody matches too, if that's your cup of tea. And the only thing it really lacked was kind of star power. But that's kind of where Impact is now, that there's not a ton of star power to go around. But I think they made up with it with a pretty exciting and pretty good show top to bottom.
Yeah, the next question I have for you is, have you talked to anyone that's chatted with Don Callis on these Impact Wrestling chat rooms? I mean, he's called me out on Twitter a few times, so you must listen to these call-in radio shows.
Yes?
That's awesome, actually. has he really? What has he said to you on Twitter? That's interesting.
I think he said something about maybe shooting on me sometime or something. It was quite a while ago. But I think I tasted it on my page because I was impressed that he was actually listening to calls.
Well, sure. Yeah, I know. I don't want to out anyone, but I know Andrew and I have both heard that there are members of the roster and potentially the office that do listen to the show. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't want to out anybody, so I don't want to name names, but I know there are some people who listen. So, hello, if you are, by the way, thank you for listening. but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, honestly, I mean, I don't know how many other. We might be the only live call-in show for Impact. I know there's other podcasts that break down the shows, obviously, but we might be the only one where you take calls. So if you're booking these shows and creatively you're putting them together and you want to hear what people are thinking about it, I mean, I don't think it's crazy to think that, hey, you might tune into a show and see what people are saying. I know some people that work in pro sports and they won't admit it, right? But they listen to sports talk radio every once in a while to try to get an idea of what the fans are saying about their team, or if they just made a trade, what people think about it. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's crazy to think that, you know, hey, we're an opportunity for them to listen to people like you, Ryan, and other people who call in, and it's kind of free feedback on their shows and what people like, what people don't like. And yeah, I'm sure there are people that listen time to time.
And my final question is, do you think they spent a little bit more money on this week's, this month's batch of tapings? Because it looks like they only had a little bit better, say, production values, like closer to WWE than prior programs have.
Yeah, you know what? It may have been a wash. I wonder if maybe they spent more on production because it could have cost less than running in Orlando. I don't know. From a travel standpoint, you know, did they save money on flights? How many guys did they have to fly to Orlando that maybe they don't have to fly to Toronto? How many people are close enough that they could drive? I mean, there may have been some areas where they saved money and it allowed them to spend money elsewhere. So, I mean, it would make sense that even if people that are in the Northeast, if you're even in the Philadelphia area, I mean, they might say, hey, do you mind driving to Toronto instead of taking a flight? So, yeah, I mean, it could have been. I don't know for sure that they spent more money from a production standpoint. It could just be that the venue was better equipped with some certain lighting and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know from a cost standpoint where this was in relation to where they were in Orlando. Although I would imagine it's got to be at least comparable. If it didn't save them money, it couldn't have cost them much more because you could tell. I mean, they're a smaller company. They're still trying to watch costs wherever they can. So I don't think it costs them considerably more. But you know, it's not also I don't also think it's crazy that if they were to save some money on talent, that maybe they were to use that money and just allocate it elsewhere. Andrew, what do you think there? Because you did talk about too how you liked the look of the show and how it looked better.
Yeah, I would guess that it was just the building itself. It was a cool building. It looked like there was a lot of lighting everywhere. I think that kind of helped out quite a bit. Also, I think just like I complained about this a few weeks ago, but whoever was shooting the last tapings seemed to be somebody else because there was a lot of really shaky camera work. Kind of on their hard camera main shot. And this time I didn't really notice it. Maybe it was the same person and they just kind of talked to the guy or used different angles. But also the last set of tapings had an issue, like a color grading issue where two of the cameras were off color wise. And this episode, I did not notice that. So yeah, all in all, I just think it looked a lot better. Definitely looked good for TV. I thought despite the smaller setting.
Yeah, I think it was mostly that, like, flashy lighting up by the ceiling. Like, I saw, like, a lot of, like, cool, like, lighting effects. Maybe that did it for me as far as looking like a good presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, no, I thought it looked good. I thought it looked good all around.
Thanks for taking my call tonight.
Thanks, Ryan, for the call. I'm glad we were able to get it figured out and get you on board there. So, Andrew, one more thing from a production standpoint, you wouldn't have seen this, but you will when you watch the show on Sunday or from Sunday. I need to commend whoever it was that changed the hard camera viewing point like mid-show on Sunday. They had a hard camera that looked like – you know how you could tell at that Rebel Complex there's like a small upper deck it looks like or like a balcony?
Oh, yeah, yep.
It looked like at the beginning of the show on Sunday, their hard camera was set up on top of that because you kind of looked down at the ring, and it looked terrible. Oh, did it look bad. You didn't really see any of the crowd because you were just down on the ring. Like it looked like a bad indie show type setup. Like it really didn't look good. And I remember commenting at the time like, oh, that hard camera is disgusting. But they changed it. Like, I don't know if they just abandoned it or if they moved it or what they did, because they went to the one that they used tonight later on in the show where it was the regular hard camera kind of set up at the same height as the ring. So whoever made that decision, whatever producer or director, after looking at that shot a couple times, said that this, you know, decided that this was a terrible idea and we're not going to use it anymore. Thank you. And I think I speak for everybody when I say thank you, because that camera angle looked terrible. You'll notice it. I noticed it a lot during the opening match, which was the four-way match. But then they didn't really go back to it after that, which was terrific because it looked brutal. But overall, yeah, I think the building looks good, and the fact that they're able to tape in smaller chunks. I mean, I know they're going back, I think, August 12th and 13th for another set of tapings. The fact that they're able to break it up and not have to do 6 days worth of tapings at a time and do, you know, 12 weeks of television at once, I think is also going to help the show. And from a cost standpoint, like Ryan was talking about, also probably means that it's cheaper to get talent in and out of Toronto because they're bringing them in more frequently. So hopefully that improves the overall quality of the show.
Yeah, and I think another thing that really helped with the quality of the show is they didn't go to any high school gyms to watch inconsequential impact matches like they've done in the past that look awful. Keeping it all in one building just helps with the show, keeps everything even. You know, they still have the issue of doing the GWN matches, which is still frustrating because they still don't bother to really set them up. Although tonight I thought maybe they aired that match with Generation Me and the Motor City Machine Guns because Alex Shelley kind of said he's retiring on Twitter.
Yeah, I thought of the same thing. That and it, you get the Young Bucks on your TV, which probably doesn't hurt either.
Exactly. Yeah, so that was kind of my guess going on that one. But Yeah, I really wish they would change the approach to that. I had this idea tonight that, you know, I don't know if Mike Tenay really does wrestling things anymore, but it would be cool to have like a 2-minute segment where he sets this up and then they go to the footage. So it actually makes some sort of context and would actually play into their past, because he's kind of been the voice of that company. But yeah, I guess just going back to the overall visuals of the show, I'd like the hard camera, what they're doing now. It resembles like what Ring of Honor does, but it's unique to Impact, and it was good. Like, you know, you couldn't really see empty seats, and everyone looked excited, and just gave the show a bit of a fresh feel.
What do you think of them going to New York for Bound for Glory? They're running, I think it's called the Melrose Ballroom, which is the same building that MLW ran in New York. It's not Hammerstein or the Manhattan Center, which from, you know, it's one of the things I remember back probably 2016, maybe, I think it was, when they taped some Impacts at the Manhattan Center. I think it was on Destination America. I don't even think it was for Pop. But I remember at the time them saying that the reason why they weren't going to go back is because New York was just a really expensive town to run television in, and I'm sure that it is. But the fact that they're going back there and or just back to New York, they're in a different building. You know, I said this to Greg the other night. I wonder where this building is, a newer building, I think it is, or recently renovated, one of the two. They've had MLW. Now they're bringing in Impact. I wonder if they're looking at wrestling as a way to get some people into their building. They might have gotten a pretty good deal on the rent. but going back to New York, I mean, I think that's a pretty bold move, and it shows that they're not afraid to move around a little bit, because they've now been to Windsor, they've been to Toronto, they were in Ottawa for a pay-per-view, now they're going to New York. It's a big city. I mean, they should be able to draw a crowd. It's New York City. I mean, there's enough wrestling fans in that area that they'll be able to get people out in that building. What did you think when you heard the news that they were going to New York for Bound for Glory?
I was surprised. You know, like you mentioned, they did those shows where ECW used to run their shows, and I thought that was going to be a terrible idea, because I figured all the hardcore fans would show up and just kind of crap all over it. But they were, you know, pretty excited, despite the main angle at that time being Dixie Carter being the focal point of the company and hiring Gene Snitsky and Ezekiel Jackson as her bodyguards.
But at least Bubba Ray Dudley did put her through a table, I think, during those tapings. I think that was in New York when she got thrown through the table.
That's true. Yeah, it was a very weird, awful time. But I guess if that's the payoff people were waiting for, they delivered it. So yeah, I'm surprised that they're going back to that market. I think they were maybe you can correct me, maybe somewhere in the Northeast in that area when they did the when they toured last summer and those shows all bombed.
They were, so they weren't in New York City, I don't think. I think they were like on Long Island for a show. And then I want to say they may have even been in like Connecticut or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. So
I also feel like though they have more steam right now.
Yeah, for sure. And that's like the big difference. They're still not, I mean, from our opinion, really, it's been pretty inconsistent. It's a better promotion than it was a year ago, but they're still not firing on all cylinders on a consistent basis. However, if they are going to go this route, give themselves an identity, they're going to be the extreme kind of company right now. You know, that might work. There's going to be people out there that want to see that sort of stuff and kind of that New York crowd. I can see that fitting in well. I think they need to put on a few more months of entertaining TV. Yeah. They got to find some sort of consistency. And then I think, you know, it could be end up being another great show for them.
Well, I know I've brought this up on multiple occasions, and I said it was my big, bold prediction, and I might be crazy, but Chris Jericho was tweeting about Slammiversary the other night and was praising some of the matches, including Sami Callihan's. And then there was, I think on Monday, somebody sent him a somebody sent him something on Twitter, and he responded to it publicly where it was like, hey, would you ever consider working for Impact Wrestling? And he responded with, of course. Again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's definitely happening. I really would not be surprised, though, whatsoever, if that New York show has Jericho involved somehow. Maybe it's not in a match. You know, maybe they just bring him in for something else. But there's just too much smoke here for me right now. I mean, Impact's working with him on his cruise. He knows Don Callis really well. I don't know. There just seems to be a lot of flirting going on between the two companies for there to not be some sort of relationship or one-off appearance at some point here.
Yeah, it's interesting because Chris Jericho likes to mess with fans. So when somebody says, "Are you thinking about it?" and he says, "Of course," he could literally in his own mind just be like, "Oh yeah, I've thought about it, but I'm never going to do it." But so knowing him, you can never quite say what he's thinking. And he also did say he would not wrestle for another company in the United States that wasn't WWE. Yeah. However, he can always change his mind on that, of course.
I almost wonder, does that hurt my prediction? Because like if Bound for Glory was in Toronto, could he have said, that's in Canada.
Exactly. No, I think so. I think he would, gleefully point that out to people. The thing with Jericho too, is that he has a healthy ego and he's a great wrestler. So he likes to kind of brag and talk himself up. He's talked multiple times about how New Japan sold, I don't know, tens of thousands more subscriptions due to his appearance. So I could see him taking a lot of pride in perhaps, maybe breaking TNA's or Impact's all-time record for pay-per-view buys, or the most buys they've got in 12 years, because I think they got 50,000 once. So I even with Jericho, I don't know if they could do that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Is there anybody else that makes sense for him to come in and face other than Callahan?
Maybe Aries, but
unless he comes in, I don't think he can come in as a heel.
Yeah.
I think people are going to be too excited to see him.
Exactly. I think so too. I mean, it worked in Japan when he was kind of attacking the guys over there, but yeah, I don't think, Brian Cage wouldn't work. Fans would turn on Brian Cage in that one.
Yeah. I mean, I just, other than Callahan, or like you said, maybe Aries, I'm not sure there's really anybody that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't think so. And I don't think he'd go for Aries either, because I think he would know people wouldn't believe he would actually win the title, although he did win the Intercontinental title in Japan. But Impact's not going to bring him in for a handful of dates, I would not think. But certainly it's certainly more interesting. And I think it would be it would be great to see for the company. And I think, even for his career, because if he worked with Callahan, that could certainly take him to the next level in exactly one match.
Yeah, I'd love to see Jericho Callahan. I think that'd be an awesome match. But you know what? Like, even if it's not a match, like, who knows? I could see them bringing him in for Bound for Glory and having him just, like, do a highlight reel segment. Just get him on the show.
Yeah.
And then, he can maybe save face with WWE and be like, well, hey, I didn't wrestle, if that's really what he's concerned with. But at the same time, like, I don't know. Is it really going to hurt his ability or relationship with WWE? You and I have discussed this in the past. Do they even look at Impact as competition? I mean, they might not. I mean, hell, they're working together practically at some points. WWE is using Impact footage, and Impact's using plugging the GWN app on WWE Network. So what the hell are they going to care if Jericho's wrestling on a pay-per-view? I mean, WWE's not even in the pay-per-view business anymore. It's not even – I wonder, honestly, if WWE would even care.
I don't think so. I mean, at this point, WWE basically owns the wrestling world. I mean, they can have anyone they want, pretty much. I mean, there's probably some guys in New Japan who just want to stay there and make a really good living. But at this point, it's kind of like a feeder system, like ECW almost was. Or it could be. Once a guy gets big enough, like a Taz, the Dudley Boys, WWE, you can just swoop in and go, okay, we'll take them now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Impact's not going to be able to lock in Sami Callihan for 3 years for $1 million a year. So it's just, I don't see them getting that upset about what Chris Jericho would do.
All right, let's try to go to another break. And if there's silence for a few seconds, we'll come back and talk. But let's try to go to another break. And when we come back, we will talk more of tonight's Impact here on the PW Torch Livecast.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Salamonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants.
and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
How about that? Now everything starts working when the show's almost over. but welcome back to the live cast. If you want to try to sneak in before we go off the air, the number to call is 515-605-9345. Make sure you hit that number one. That's going to tell us you want to get on the air. Let's hit on some of the stuff that we haven't talked about yet when it comes to this week's edition of the show. They started with Taiji Ishimori against Petey Williams. I thought this was a really good opener. What do you think of Ishimori's new look? I mean, obviously, he's part of the Bullet Club now, so he's in black. He kind of abandoned the green tights he was wearing. He's in all black. He's cut his hair. I think it's a cool look, and I thought that this was a really good match and a really, really good way to start a show where you might get a lot of viewers, maybe even some new viewers after the praise you were getting for the pay-per-view, to start it with a good match and a guy with the Bullet Club, a guy who's affiliated with the Bullet Club involved in that match as well. I thought was a good first match in the show. Obviously, we'll talk about the opening promo segment in a second, but I thought this was a good first match in the show.
I think his look is great. I think you've been higher on him than I have, and I think part of that for me is due to I just didn't think he had a great look. I didn't get like the green tights and that were like half kind of see through on the sides sort of deal. It was just a weird look for me, but I mean, in wrestling, perception and look goes a long way. And this is a big boost for him. The match itself was good. It's cool to see him go over cleanly. The Bullet Club connection should help him out. So, and you could tell they were really hyping that up. They brought it up half a dozen times during that match. A good way to kick off the show, a good way to kick off this series of tapings. And I hope they do more with Ishimori this time around, because they certainly never really gave him any character development in his last kind of run with the company.
Also, like I said, I forgot to mention it, but they opened the show with that promo segment. Austin Aries came out and kind of gloated. He was doing his little, you know, not celebration, but talking about how much better he is than everybody because he retained the title. And Eddie Edwards attacked him with a kendo stick. So it seems like they're going to go with Eddie Edwards and Austin Aries at some point here. And that also means that Eddie Edwards is a babyface again. So he was a heel. I mean, that was the one thing I didn't like about the match at Slammiversary, and it's one of my only critiques from the show, was Eddie Edwards was a heel and was a maniac for months. All of a sudden, he beats Tommy Dreamer, he breaks down in tears, and now he's a babyface again. I mean, that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me at all. But yeah, that seems to be the way that they're going. I think they were, in the end, just trying to give Eddie Edwards more of an edge and not make him feel like such a baby-faced babyface, so to speak. But what ends up happening is I think it comes across as they didn't know what they were doing, and they wanted to make him a heel and then said, no, he's either not pulling it off or we need a babyface right now, so we're just going to ignore what we've been doing for the last couple of months. I think people may have a hard time getting over that, but Eddie Edwards versus Austin Aries should be some pretty good matches for the world title.
I think so too. That bugs me. Of course, I didn't see it play out, but I read your report and I'm like, what? that happened after all these months of literally trying to kill Sammy Callahan in the woods.
They use the word murder.
Yeah, four or five weeks ago.
I feel like we have to keep saying that. We're not being facetious. They actually said, he said on television that he was going to murder him.
Yeah, and this angle, it's either you love it or hate it. It's been so goofy. I've said a couple times that Edwards, I just don't think he's good enough to pull this off. Like when he was in the middle of the ring and his mouth was wide open, I just kind of laughed to myself. It just looked so goofy. I don't know. He's a more interesting character than he's probably ever been on Impact, but he's just so all over the place. I can't get behind him from a fan's perspective. Of going after this title when he just tried to kill a guy, and that angle with Tommy Dreamer just wrapped up and didn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, he also seemed like he wanted to kill Tommy Dreamer, too.
Yeah.
And even then, like, in turning him babyface again, like Dreamer didn't seem like he trusted him. He gave him the kendo stick and kind of endorsed him, and they made it seem like it was his big passing of the torch moment. But Dreamer even kind of seemed not like he was totally trustworthy of Edwards. So it was a weird dynamic the way they tried to pull it off. I didn't like it. Hopefully, I think some good matches between Eddie Edwards and Austin Aries will have me getting over it pretty quickly. But yeah, I didn't like the way they pulled it off of the pay-per-view at all. Let's see. Moving on, they then went to... So then they went to... And this is interesting. Then they went to a backstage segment with Anthony Carelli, who's Santino Marella. And he was there with one of his students, and he was being interviewed. And Austin Aries broke in and was upset that Eddie Edwards had attacked him and had challenged Anthony Carelli to a match. He said he couldn't take the challenge because he's not medically cleared. He has a neck issue. But his student accepted the match and then seemed pretty excited about the fact that he had talked himself into an Impact title shot. And he left the screen. And then what I thought was is going to fly under the radar, but is one of the lines of the night. He tells the interviewer, and I can't remember her name. I apologize. But Anthony Carelli looks at the interviewer and says, well, at least he paid his tuition in advance. I don't know when this match will happen, but I would imagine Aries is going to squash this poor kid at some point. What do you think of the involvement, though, of Carelli here? I thought they missed a golden opportunity to make some sort of joke about the fact that he doesn't – that Santino or Anthony Carelli doesn't have an Italian accent anymore. Because he never had one to begin with. But what do you think of his involvement? I mean, he owns a school and a promotion up there, and I forget exactly what it's called. It's like Battle Arts or Wrestling Arts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it seems like maybe he'll be brought in as some type of manager or some type of trainer or something.
Yes. So his line at the end is probably the first time I'd laughed at Santino in probably about 10 years. I would say
the guilty a huge guilty pleasure of mine that I laughed at every single week was the honk-a-meter.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was great.
Yes, that was probably where it ended for me. Like I like the honk-a-meter, everything post honk-a-meter.
Yeah.
Oh man,
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah, some people probably liked him. Probably some liked him as a guilty pleasure. I could not stand the character. So I knew he would show up eventually on Impact, and I was dreading the day. And then I saw this, and I'm like, that was actually pretty good. Seeing him as a normal person worked. And Aries was great, just being a cocky jerk, mocking him for the fact that he can't wrestle.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this match and seeing what happens. I don't need to see him ever become a comedy character. I mean, they already have like Grado filling that role, but if he wants to be some sort of sincere manager type, brings in different students to wrestle. Yeah. I'm fine with him playing that role.
It almost strikes me as maybe they're going to play it off as like an MMA trainer. Cause Aries kept saying, you know, he goes, you're this big trainer or you think you're this great trainer. Like, why don't you let me try one of your students or something like that? You know, you watch the UFC and who's in the corner for every fighter. There's a couple of trainers in the corner. So maybe, you know, they try to do something as Carelli as the trainer for some of his guys. And it's almost like the modern day manager where you got the trainer in the corner kind of shouting out instructions, you know, the way that an MMA trainer during an MMA fight is shouting out instructions to his fighter. So, you know, that's first that we'll see where it goes. My first thought is they may try and do something like that here.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, he's been doing stuff with Impact for a while. I think he has like his own online show, maybe.
He does something on Twitch, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. So I imagine he will probably be around for a bit, and hopefully, you know, it seems to be heading somewhere, and hopefully they just actually continue down that path and write a compelling story.
Tessa Blanchard beat Rebel in essentially a squash match. I thought this was good. I thought for what it was, it accomplished what it needed to do. They gave Tessa a big win on Sunday, and then she comes out here and gets a win over an established name. Like Rebel's not Gail Kim, But to a TNA audience or an Impact audience, she's been in the company. She's an established name. She's not some no name, you know, that they got off the street in Toronto. So I thought this was a good way to begin to program Tessa as this ass kicker in the division, having her get two big wins like this in 5 days.
Yeah, I thought so too. At first, Rebel was getting in a lot of offense, and I was just thinking, man, I can't believe they keep doing this with Tessa. I mean, ideally, every match of hers up to this point would be 2-3 minutes, and you would wonder, man, who can dare stand toe to toe with her for more than 3 minutes? And then, you know, eventually somebody does. But this was good. If they're going to, you know, they signed her to a 2-year deal, they need to get her back on track. They need to have her pick up some wins. So, yeah, this is good. I mean, Rebel looked fine in the match. And, yeah, just gave her a win over a veteran that pops in and out of the company for the past 5-6 years.
What did you think of the debut of Scarlett Boudreaux, which came up after this match? I'm not going to lie to you. I didn't think the promo was that great. I thought she delivered it okay. I think the character idea is brilliant. If you didn't see Impact tonight, essentially Scarlett Boudreaux, they've aired vignettes for the last couple of weeks. She came out and talked about how she comes out, you know, essentially wearing lingerie. And she talked about how in this interview she wants to, be remembered as a women's activist and fighting for women's rights. And she talks about how there's been revolutions and people are taking, you know, women more seriously, but she wants to empower women and she's not going to apologize and she's not going to be hot shamed, I think is what she said. she said that she wants to make wrestling sexy again. So essentially what this character is you have someone who would kind of fit the category of like a WWE diva. And I think where they're going with it, what I think is genius about it, is she's saying that, oh, you've got these athletic women's wrestlers. No, that's not what it should be. It should be what it was in 2010, and we should have diva pillow fights. Like, I think that's where they're going with it, honestly. I think she's going to be this heel that tries to, you know, quote unquote, empower women, as she was saying, by essentially not empowering them at all. And I just think it's a genius character because no one looks back on those diva days as with much fondness at all. And I think she's going to try to tell people that we need to go back in that direction. I think it's a really good idea. We'll see how well they can pull it off execution wise. But I think it's a really good idea for a character.
I think this could be a great character, or it could be a big misfire.
Oh, yeah.
It
has the potential to be awful if they don't execute it the right way.
Yes, but they have to be careful.
Yeah, the root idea, I think, is really good.
Yes, agreed on that. You know, watching it, I'm like, man, this is such a throwback to, like, the Attitude Era. I could see somebody like Sable cutting that promo, a heel Sable, and then I'm like, man, Attitude Era was 20 years ago, so I guess it is time for some throwbacks of that. And if you look at what they're doing lately with all the increased violence on the show and swearing, I'm like, yeah, this kind of fits what they're going for. It's a sexual character, I guess. So nobody else in the company is like that, so I think they could have a lot of fun with this. But yeah, it just all comes down to writing. But certainly nobody else in all of wrestling in WWE, NXT, Impact is like this. So she certainly stands out, and I'm curious to see what they're going to do with her.
She's also the anti-Tessa Blanchard. And that's something that Greg and I talked about on Sunday, and Greg brought up the point. He said, and I at the time, I thought he was right. He goes, you know, I don't see any way that you could take Tessa Blanchard and make her a babyface one day. Like, the character she portrays is just not going to be suitable for a babyface. She's just – there's certain people – his point was, you know, there's – a lot of times you could take almost any heel character and say, okay, I could totally see how they're going to make this person a babyface in a year or 2 years. And he goes, with Tessa, I just don't see it. This is the way they could do it. If you took Tessa Blanchard exactly how she is now, without changing her character one bit, and have this Scarlett Boudreau character try to change her and tell her that, you know, she's too muscular and she's too athletic and she wrestles too hard, and have Tessa basically say, hey, shut up, and slap her, you know, and get into this fight. Like, that's, I think, how you could make that Tessa Blanchard character a babyface if they ever wanted to do it. And I don't necessarily think they have to do it right now. But, you know, playing off of a character like this is, I think, one way, maybe the only way, that you could take a character like Tessa Blanchard and actually turn her into a viable babyface.
Yeah, I could see that down the road for sure. Tessa's so good in the ring. I think, you know, people are going to respect her, and they will respect her more if she beats the crap out of somebody who has no respect for women's wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's squeeze in another break. We'll come back and finish running down the show here on the Thursday livecast.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it, it takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, back here in the live cast, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek talking Impact with you. And let's get to the next match on the card right after that Scarlett Boudreau promo. It was Johnny Impact. He made his return to Impact. He made his return to the company. It's Slammiversary on Sunday. He beat Trevor Lee here in a decently long match, in a pretty competitive match. And I put in my Impact report here that I'm not usually a fan of using Trevor Lee as a way to get somebody over like this. But here I thought it was okay, and I'm going to make an exception because Johnny Impact beating some low-level guy on the card that didn't mean anything, I don't think is a good way for him to return to the show. Johnny Impact wrestling Trevor Lee in a really good match that went a long time, I think is the better presentation. So while I'm not usually a fan of Trevor Lee, you know, having to lose matches like he has been, I thought that this worked because Johnny Impact needed to come back and not only get a win, but there needed to be some entertainment to the match, and he needed to be able to work off somebody that can work off of the Johnny Impact style, and Trevor Lee can obviously do that. And I just think that this plays better and is more effective than if he were to wrestle, you know, pick your guy. Like, if it was Johnny Impact and Andrew Everett or whomever, like, no offense, but to somebody lower in the card, I just don't think it plays as well. I thought this played well, even though Trevor Lee had to take the loss.
Yeah, it made me a bit curious and wondering if Impact management is now seen more in Trevor Lee, because when he first came out, I assumed he was getting squashed in 2-3 minutes. But no, the two went back and forth, and there was actually one or two points where I thought he might win.
Yeah,
and they were actually giving him a push, and you know, I was hoping they'd do something more interesting, but no. Yeah, it was fun. It was a good way for Impact to come back, and makes me slightly hopeful that they see more in Lee, and, you know, by letting him go so long against one of their probably top three or four stars.
Impact called out Kongo Kong and Jimmy Jacobs after the match, so they're going to revisit that, as they probably should. Kongo Kong took Impact out of action within storyline a couple of months ago, so it makes sense that they would revisit that feud here and give Impact a way to kind of get redemption there. But overall, I thought Johnny Impact looked good. I thought he looked good on Sunday. I thought he looked good here. I thought his promo was better, not as cheesy as some of the other ones have been. So overall, not a bad couple of nights for him.
Yeah, I thought so too. He only dropped Slamtown once, and it was very, it was the very last thing he said, which makes it, I guess, less annoying.
There were no turd cutters.
No turret cutters, which is always refreshing to hear. I was confused, though. What was he doing on the motorcycle when,
Nate?
Like, seeing stuff like that makes me go, oh, he's a heel. Like, yeah. He's being a jerk to these guys and making them do stuff for him.
He was shown back. Yeah, if you missed the show, he was shown backstage before his match sitting on a motorcycle that was not running, making two guys sitting next to him make motorcycle noises.
So, what was that?
I have no idea. absolutely no idea.
I, like, of all the more I think about it, the more I'm like, what the hell? Like,
just completely ridiculous.
Who thought that up? Who agreed to it? And what did it mean?
It's almost like they were just doing it. Like, guys are messing around backstage during the day, and someone happened to catch it on camera, because it didn't really make any sense whatsoever.
No, now I'm going to be up all night wondering what that was all about.
So what happened after that? I mean, I lost my place in my report here. Oh, Joe Henry. Joe Henry gave Grado a Joe Henry t-shirt. Grado seemed pretty excited about it. He put it on. And then Eli Drake came into the picture. He gave a present to Grado, said it was for all three of them, Grado, Henry, and Katarina. And then Drake left. Grado opened the present, and it was a picture frame that had love written across the top. And it was a picture of Katarina just gazing at Joe Henry. And Katarina and Joe Henry seemed very upset, and they were going to go throw the picture away. And Grado seemed very confused as to why he wasn't in the photo. So, again, they're playing up this Joe Henry, Grado, Katarina thing. What did you think of this segment, and what do you think of Joe Henry, and what do you know about Joe Henry? Because I think in my Impact report last week put that I didn't get it. I just didn't understand the song, the singing, all this other stuff, because I had never seen him before. Right. And I thought it was kind of funny because somebody, I think, it was either on Twitter or on my Impact report. Somebody left a comment basically that I was the biggest idiot in the world for not knowing what Joe Henry has done in the UK. And I said, oh, well, you know, excuse me for not knowing exactly what Joe Henry's gimmick was in the UK, considering I live here in the US and don't exactly watch a ton of UK wrestling. But what do you think of how this angle is playing out? And what did you know anything about Joe Henry coming into this? Has any of this made more sense to you? Or am I crazy here?
Well, you certainly are not crazy, nor are you the biggest idiot in the world.
Well, I may be that, but for other reasons. If I am, it's not because I don't know who Joe Henry, he did in the UK.
The segment was kind of, you know, these are very hit or miss for me as well. Anything involving Grado is usually more miss. This was kind of amusing just because the two of them had to together decide to throw that away. Like, one of them couldn't just do it alone. So it's like, you know, they're going to go sneak off and make out or something. So that was fine. I'm sadly kind of curious where this is headed as well, which is good that Impact is doing a good job of giving people things to do on their show, even if they are just mid-card comedy. Henry, I have seen, I mentioned last week, I used to write for What Culture.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They had their own wrestling promotion. It has now turned into, it was WCPW, and then, so they used some guys like Kurt Angle. They brought in Jim Ross and Jim Cornette to announce kind of one of their pay-per-views. But Joe Hendry, I believe, lived in the area, and nobody had, you know, he wasn't like a WWE guy. So he was one of their top guys in the promotion. And every time he would come out, he would do the same thing. He would sing, do a little video, sing a song about his opponent. So they kind of set it up there, or, you know, whereas Impact hasn't, it just happened. You're like, well, what was that? He also, yeah, then they became Defiant Wrestling, which is, yeah, the company that Austin Aries held one of their titles from. But I don't think, I don't know if he wrestles over there anymore or not. I don't really keep up to date. So yeah, he's kind of an unknown guy, so don't feel bad at all. But he has a ton of videos out there kind of mocking other people, which are, you know, kind of fun.
KM and Fala Ba were backstage. KM was trying to tell Fala Ba that he needed to find his mean streak. They aired a vignette on Killer Cross. King, it was backstage with the OGs. He was talking about how he expected more out of LAX and Conan. They aired a video on OVE, and this was interesting. So Sami Callihan was in a bathroom yelling at himself in a mirror for getting shaved, bald, and basically said he looked stupid with his head shaved. He was telling himself this. The Chris brothers were there and tried to convince him that he looked great. Callahan was also wearing a sling, by the way. OVE then said they needed to go to the bathroom, so they all went to a bunch of urinals and were going to the bathroom. Unfortunately, there was some dude with long hair between them. Callahan started yelling at the guy. They had a camera angle from the bottom, so all you saw were their feet. And Callahan turned towards them and began urinating on the guy. That was what was insinuated. Yep. And then Callahan went nuts, asked the guy if he was looking at his hair. OVE attacked this guy, and then Callahan demanded that the guy tell him that he was pretty. And then OVE shaved this guy's head. So I don't know who this guy was, but unfortunately for him, he got peed on and then got his head shaved all within a matter of a few minutes.
What a day for that guy.
An innocent guy just trying to go to the bathroom. All of a sudden, he got peed on and then had his head shaved.
I have to wonder why, though. They always show these OVE videos, like, you know, they're going to go beat up Bobby Lashley, so they record it. Like, why were they recording them, Sami Callihan peeing?
If you were to pull quotes to put in like the preview for our live cast every week, or just like cut clips out as an advertisement, that would be the line that we would use for this show. Why would they video Sami Callihan peeing? That would be the pull out quote.
I'll send that to Wade. See if he'll go for it.
Yeah. Why? So this guy, wait a minute. They're in the men's room. So this guy walks into the men's room. These three guys have a camcorder out and they're videoing themselves in the men's room. And this guy just was like, oh, I've got to go so bad. I'm just going to go. Like, no, I'm sorry. If I walk into a bathroom and there's three weird looking dudes in there with a camcorder, I'm holding it.
I'll wait 2 minutes.
Yeah. I'm going to go find another bathroom. I don't think I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I got to go that bad. Oh, I'll go in between you two guys. Yeah, you guys with the video camera. And the guy talking to himself in the mirror. Yeah, I'm probably going to just find it. I'm going to go, okay.
The guy, yeah, he basically got what was coming for him.
You know
he
what?
He walked into that situation. Yeah.
The more I think about it, you're absolutely right. He got what he deserved. If you walk into that situation, you see a guy with a video camera. I don't care if Sami Callihan was talking to himself in the bathroom. The video camera should have been clue enough. If I walk into a men's room and there's a guy with a camcorder just videotaping away, I'm not using that men's room.
No.
Yeah. So OVE, they're the baby faces here. This guy got what he deserved.
Man, yeah. I mean, lesson learned, kids. Yeah. You see a guy in the bathroom. The video camera, you leave. It's a public service announcement.
Absolutely. You know what? If that guy were a friend of mine and he's telling me that story, you're not going to believe what happened to me. I was in Toronto. I needed to go to the bathroom. So I walk in, and there's this guy videotaping another guy in the mirror talking. I just really had to go, so I went, and they beat me up, and they shaved my head and peed on me and videotaped the whole thing. I'm going to say, well, wait a minute, man. Like, slow down. Rewind at the beginning of this. You walked in and they were videotaping themselves in the bathroom and you didn't just walk away? Like,
right.
I wouldn't, even if it was my best friend, I'd be like, I don't feel bad for you at all.
Yeah, you deserve that head shaving now. Yeah.
I'd say, what the hell is wrong with you? If you walk into a bathroom and there's a bunch of guys in there with a video camera, you get out of that bathroom. It's not that hard.
It's just common sense.
It really is. I'm sorry.
No,
but yeah, you know what? I'm in total agree. We've talked our way into it. This guy got what he deserved. I don't know his name. I'm sorry if the guy's listening, but I don't feel bad for you.
Yeah, if anybody in Impact is listening, they really do need to clean up that plot hole next week.
Yeah, hopefully they just make the guy make OVE. They're baby faces now. Clearly, I mean that was a baby face turn.
That'd be the weirdest baby face turn. Time.
You know what though? I totally get it. I get what they were doing. They were in the middle of doing their vignette, their video, doing whatever they were doing in the bathroom, and they probably even looked at that guy and went, wait a minute.
Yeah.
This guy's not freaked out that us three weird looking dudes have a video camera out in the men's room. He's just gonna go like nothing's wrong. Clearly there's something seriously wrong with this individual. We need to take him out.
This guy's the weirdo. Who knows what he's up to.
Exactly. Who's the weirdo now? He didn't think that what we were doing is weird. So what is he? Who knows what he does behind closed doors? This guy needs his head shaved.
Man, that's. This is probably a new feud. This guy will probably be back and form an army of perverts, or I don't know what he's doing.
I hope so. I'm also not convinced that they actually shaved his head.
Oh, yeah.
because so this is just a little production thing, but they showed them the clippers were on. They showed them shaving his head, but they also appear to be like kind of pulling hair off the guy's head. And it, even after they shaved him, you didn't really see, at least I couldn't because the camera was kind of grainy and blurry. You didn't really see a bald spot. So I don't know if they actually shaved his head.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I guess, yeah, I saw them pulling up like on his ponytail, but
yeah,
the angle they were using and they didn't hold long. I figured they'd hold until he was bald or, you know, cut back to it. But
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so he may have got lucky then and not even had to shave his head.
Yeah, well, now, I mean, clearly for he needs his head shaved.
Oh, for sure.
100%.
Yeah, you don't get away with that. Yeah,
hopefully they deliver on that.
Yeah.
And as you were saying, too, Sammy Callahan, a couple of weeks ago, you talked about how Sammy Callahan has a weird haircut and why is he so attached to his hair. Looks 110% better with his head shaved.
I only got a brief look at him during that. And I'm like, man, I wonder if I'd even recognize him now if he like walked by me on the street. So this is going to take a little bit of getting used to. It was like when Dolph Ziggler stopped bleaching his hair briefly and he had brown hair. he just like looked like a different person. So it's going to take a little getting used to for me, but
Dolph Ziggler, like, I think we've talked about this before. The fact that he hasn't been, and he's starting to, I'll give him credit because the last couple of months he's been pretty good and the matches with Rollins have all been pretty good. But the fact, like, it bugs me that Dolph Ziggler can't find his own character. And it's just like this constant, he's in a constant state of ripping somebody else off. Like he's the new Billy Gunn or he's the new Shawn Michaels. Like he's never just been himself. Like he constantly needs to be someone else. I find that very annoying, but it seems like he is starting to find his groove a little bit now.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. I'm with you on him. Like plus he wears like jean jackets from the '80s. He just experiments with his hair. It's nothing ever clicks with him for me. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, that's not Impact related at all. The reason why we got to that though is after that OVE thing, they went right to the main event, which we've already talked about. So is there anything else you think we need to touch on before we get on out of here?
I must say I really did enjoy the Falaba and KM segment where he went up to that guy. He's like, what's your name? He's like, no, it's garbage. And then threw him into a garbage can.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hope they do more. I hope they do more with KM and Falaba because I know Grado is supposed to be like the comic relief for the show. I find KM and Falaba like 10 times more funny.
I do too. And I was super critical when they put them together. I was super critical when they tore them apart right away. And then I probably should have been critical when they put them back together. But by that point, I think I gave up. And now they kind of won me over. It's so stupid, but it's funny.
I love that Falaba just says ba. That's all he can say. There's never been any explanation for why that's all he can say, but it's all he can say, which I think is great. Because no matter what KM says to him, the only response is ba. It's just ba with different inflection. Ba?
Yeah.
Ba. Ba.
It's pretty good. And I guess he can also say no, no, no.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, no, no. So, yeah, he can say two words. And ba's not really a word, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just his name.
I mean, what are they going to do if they ever see more in him and he needs to suddenly come out and cut like a 15-minute promo?
They'll have to come up with a reason like why Festus turned into Luke Gallows. CM Punk, it was the drugs that made Festus the way he was. There's going to be a reason that Falaba is the way he was, and somebody will have to be his savior and save him.
Or otherwise, he does just do a 10-minute promo of saying nothing but bah, 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 bah.
That would be funny. Have they done that yet? Like, they haven't done anything with that, where like he's interviewed backstage or something, and he gets asked a question, and he just every answer is bah, or like bah like five or six times.
I'm sure we're headed to that. Sooner or later.
You know what? I'd laugh at it.
Oh, yeah. It would get me
too. I would 100% laugh at it.
You know, some things start out stupid and then they somehow work. And that's what these two are right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're hitting home runs right now. And they're doing it in small. I mean, what was that segment tonight? Like 15 seconds, 30 seconds? They're not getting a ton of time, but they're hitting home runs every single time they're on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. Yeah. KM is a. I thought he was vastly wasted as jobbing all the time, but he's turned his bully act into a pretty fun comedy act.
Yeah. Cool. Anything else we should hit on before we get out of here? I think we hit on most of the Impact stuff, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's it. Quickly, if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Andrew Socek, S-O-U-C-E-K. Also, I think 5 episodes now, if you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Torch, you can listen to Jeff Rush and I do the Pro Wrestling Podcast. Podcast is a podcast on pro wrestling podcasts, all the big ones out there. We talk Steve Austin, Something to Wrestle, go back and forth, talk about the interesting stuff, the stuff we didn't like. We rate the episodes, tell you to skip them, tell you to watch them. Between the two of us, we probably listen to 8-10 different podcasts a week and kind of break them down for you. So check that out. Otherwise, check out pwpodcast.com if you want longer kind of recaps of the things we talk about on that show.
Awesome. And you can follow me on Twitter at MikeMcMahonPW. You can check out my Impact report. It is on pwtorch.com right now. I also wrote an editorial earlier in the week kind of talking about Impact's new direction, how I think they showed us what they want their direction to be at Slammiversary. So that was it was pretty long. It was probably 700 or 800 words. You can check that out at pwtorch.com as well. And that'll do it, I think. We'll be back next Thursday when Impact goes off the air. And like Andrew said, if you're a VIP member, you can check out the PW Podcast podcast. And there's a ton of benefits you're going to get if you're a VIP member here at pwtorch.com. So we urge you to join us on the VIP side, where you're going to get hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of wrestling content, audio form, every single month, every single week, really. But you also get access to VIP exclusive columns and VIP exclusive the PW Torch newsletter. You're going to get that every week if you're a VIP member as well. So there's a ton of reasons to go VIP, and Wade Keller is going to tell you about all of those reasons in just a second. But this is going to do it for Andrew and I this week. So thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for checking out the show. And we'll talk to you next week right back here on the Thursday livecast, talking Impact Wrestling every Thursday here at 10 p.m. Eastern as soon as Impact goes off the air.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.